So folks that don't know me, I'm Scott Hunter. I've been at Microsoft for about the last 10 years. I actually joined in 2007. I joined the ASP.NET team. And then over the years, that role kind of grew up to encompass more and more of .NET. This is not making me feel good. Okay. I come and go. My current role is I'm Director of Program Management at Microsoft on the .NET platform. And I have two talks today. I have this talk, which is What's New in Visual Studio 2017. And I have a talk a little bit later today that's kind of what's the future and strategy that we have around .NET. I have like a ton of demos today. I don't know how many we'll actually get through. And if I don't get through something, it'll probably just jump into the next talk because that's just the best way to do that. Just curious, who in here is using Visual Studio 2017? All the hands go up. We never know at these conferences what to expect. Who in here is using Visual Studio 2017 15.3 Preview? Crickets. Awesome. That's good. Some of the stuff I'm going to show today is actually using that. And let's see if my internet is actually functional. So at the Build Conference a week or so ago, we announced something we call 15.3 Preview. And this is basically the next release of Visual Studio 2017 that will ship sometime next summer. I mean, next summer, this summer. It should ship around July. Is somewhere in the July, August timeframe is going to be my guess. For people that don't know, you've all seen the Visual Studio installer as part of this. If you want to go try the preview, because of our install tech, the previews are quite a bit different than they used to be. Used to be that you would have to wipe your machine out and have a brand new version of Visual Studio on the machine. You can now install these things side by side. I've only got the preview on my machine, but if I had the RTM, I can now have the RTM and the preview side by side. If you try to install the preview as part of the installation model, it'll actually ask you to give it a name in this screen, and you can call it whatever you want. But it means you can try the new bits out without having to feel like you've messed up your RTM installation of VS. You can basically install these things completely side by side, which I think is pretty cool. Since everybody in here actually has already got Visual Studio 2015, I'm not gonna talk too much about this, but one of the big things that you can see is I can now check on and check off tons more stuff than I could in the past via the installer. At the same, so you can basically say I want .NET and uncheck everything else you want and you won't get anything else. And that was a huge push from the team. And also you're going to find that updates to Visual Studio actually install really, really fast as well for the same reasons. We've rebuilt all the installer tech. So for the most part, minus about six or seven global components, nothing in the VS installer actually touches your registry. We actually virtualize the registry in the product. And we don't use typical installers. We actually have special installers for Visual Studio that don't touch your machine. There are some global components like SQL and stuff like that that actually are installed globally, but it means you can much more safely go install one of these things side by side. And it also means, as I said, you're not going to have, I mean, we all, I assume people in the room all had VS 2015, and you got like update three, and it grinds your machine for 2.5 hours while it installs. You're going to find the updates in VS 2017 just really, really quick. But let's go through all the stuff we're going to talk about today. If this will close or not. Love that installer, man. There you go. Now I closed everything. Boom. It doesn't like my internet. That's why it's being picky. Anybody here use Xamarin Bits? Few hands. To me, one of the most exciting parts of VS 2017 is we acquired Xamarin last April, right before the Build Conference last year. And so Xamarin, you can check mobile inside the VS, and you'll get all the Xamarin Bits that just work. I don't know how much they showed this morning in the or Scott Gu showed yesterday. But there's also a cool Mobile Center thing, which is a mechanism for both your Windows apps and your mobile apps for testing them in the cloud, running them in the cloud, putting them around. There's a new start page, which I'll show some of the stuff in. We just got .NET Core built into VS 2017, and the preview that I'm running has .NET Core 2.0 preview in it as well. We've got support for containers in Visual Studio. I'll do a demo of that as well. Probably code style is one of the coolest things that I think we've done in a long time, and I'll do a demo of that. It's probably hidden, and most people don't know how to do editor config style stuff with it, but it's a really cool model. The live unit testing stuff is pretty neat. We got some C# 7 stuff, so a lot of stuff there. I do have this slide if you want to take a picture of it. I will find wherever they want us to upload these things. It has links to a couple things I'm going to show today. It's got, first off, it's got the 15.3 preview URL, if you want to grab that. And it's got these two articles on editor config, which is part of the really cool stuff that you can do with the editor to set rules in your projects and push them around. So let's see if I can make things work. So to do some of the demos that I have, I actually have to create a private network between my machine and another machine over here. And we will see if that works. If not, I will tether my phone. Let's try this. See if that actually looks positive. Okay, so what I did is I went into Visual Studio 2017 and I file nude a project, and I selected an iPhone project. And so you'll notice that because I've installed the mobile workloads, I've got all the iOS products here. I've got the TV products here. I've got Android in here as well. I've got all this stuff built in. And as one of the guys that works on the .NET platform, this is super exciting to me because for once, we now have .NET running pretty much everywhere. We have it on Windows, Mac, and Linux on the server. We have it on Windows for the client. We've got it on all these Android devices and iOS devices. And if you haven't heard, we have Samsung later this year. The standard programming model for building Tizen, which is their operating system for their smart TVs and their appliances and their watches, it's all .NET based. And so basically anything you want, that's ARM32, you can run .NET on. So I built a single phone application here. And what's cool about this is, even though I'm in VS on Windows, what I did here is a storyboard is the main file that you actually use to define your UI in a iOS-based application. And so this is a Xamarin app, which means all my code is C#, but I have the ability to have my UI be native UI. That's kind of the promise of the Xamarin model, is you actually build native UI on Windows, you build native UI on Android, you build native UI on iOS, and you get a good experience here. So let's see if this is going to be a tether your phone scenario here. So what's actually going on here is, for the first time, we've actually let you have, I'm sure that they might have shown in the keynote yesterday, they probably showed the live player applications, which allows you to not install anything onto your phones at all for the most part. In my case, what I do is I have a Mac on my network, and because of that, I can actually bring up the same editor for UI that exists in Xcode. So here I am in VS. I've got the look of my phone up here, and I can just do things like, let's grab a label. You're all C# people in here. Come up here and stick the label at the top of the screen. Make it a bit wider. And we'll give it a name. Let's bring up the property sheet. Call it my label. Okay, now let's find a map. Drag the map over here. My lack of internet's going to make this not as cool as it should be. And so I'm just, you know, dragging things around the screen just like you would if you're building a WinForm style application. I'll give this guy a name as well, call it my map. And then I can just go into my controller file, and, you know, once again, I'm in C# now. So at this point in time, everything is C#. Save that just to be good. And I'll come in here, and this is basically where I add code after I've done something here. So I can say my map dot. This is a cool feature that we added in VS 17, if you haven't tried yet, is notice that when I'm inside of here, I now have these filters across the bottom. So I can say, just show me the events, because that's all I care about here is I want to know when the region changed. So I'll do that. Plus equal tab for completion. Apply. Zoom back out here. And so what I basically said is when that map changes on the screen, call this method. And then what I'll do is I would just come over here and say, let's go grab my label, text, and it would be my map. Well, I think it's called center coordinate, longitude, Nothing crazy here. Just basically fill the text with the data from the map. Now, what's cool is, as I was saying before, is now I can build this. It should all build and be happy. I'll put a breakpoint in here. So even though I'm on a Windows PC, I can put a breakpoint in here, and I will run this. And so on a Windows machine, I have the iPhone emulator. Take a second to boot up for the first time. And then it will fail spectacularly once it boots up because I don't have internet, so it's gonna struggle to actually get the map and show us the map. My breakpoint hits. So I'm debugging an iOS app running on an emulator on a Windows PC. Oh, the map is actually going to work. Nice. And what's cool is, because I'm on a touch Windows PC, I can even do better than I could on a Mac. I can actually zoom in with my fingers. Breakpoint's going to fire. And so to me, that is pretty slick. You know, iOS on a Mac, on a Windows PC, both building, debugging, emulating, all awesome. Who in here is building phone apps? You have to have a Mac in your network. So what you have to do is get it like a Mac Mini, have a single Mac Mini. The question was I linked to a Mac? I was linked to a Mac for parts of this. If I use the Xamarin Player, I can actually do all of this without the Mac. I can actually build without the Mac, and I can actually run on the player without the Mac. You only need the Mac if you want to see the form designer that I showed up there. But still, one Mac on your network and you're good. In the long run, I think even that'll go away as well. So let me show something else in this space. And the thing I'm going to show next, I'm going to flip to the beautiful internet they have here. And I'll quickly show Mobile Center, and then we'll show some really cool stuff. Okay, so not only can we build these applications, there you go, but we've also, as part of my previous role, I was in the Azure team for a bit, and we were acquiring companies to make mobile development easier. And so this is a cool thing called Mobile Center. It's mobile.azure.com. And basically what you do when you build an app, and the app can be a Xamarin app, it can be an iOS, Android app, it can be a Windows client app. We announced at Build, if you're building WinForms, UWP applications, you can use this as well for those. And some of the cool things is I have a couple things. I can build in the cloud. So this will show me my branches, and I can basically, if I've got source control wired to this, when I make commits to source code, it will build in the cloud. That becomes cool because it can actually test in the cloud, and that's where things are really, really interesting. So here's my tests from March 1st. I can click over here, and we'll see the tests that I have. I've got two tests here. I've got a can I sign in and can I go to Lion King. If I click can I sign in, what's really slick is notice that I have two devices. I have an iPhone, two different size iPhones here. And as I click around inside of the left side, you'll see the screens on the iPhones change. And so not only do you run your test in the cloud on devices that you don't have, because I know that I don't have a whole pile of iPhones and Android phones and stuff like that with the test part of Mobile Center, you can take your application, push it up to the cloud, and run it on our bank of hardware. And so I can come over here, if I click on the phone, you can see that detail with the screen filled in. You can see my memory usage. So it's pretty slick stuff. The next thing is, if I'm building mobile apps or even UWP applications, I want to distribute these. And so we bought a company called Hockey App a couple of years ago. That's integrated in here as well. I can actually say who I want to send that to. We have the ability to have your applications use data in the cloud. And so you can just configure that all right from here. You can configure identity. That's like Facebook sign-in, Microsoft sign-in, Azure Active Directory sign-in. And then, of course, the more important things here as well is I can also see how many crashes my applications are having. I can get the errors and the details from those crashes all across the platform. I get analytics. I can see how many active users I have using my applications, how long they actually use the app once they're running the app. You get a variety of telemetry here. And so it's a great, awesome way to build mobile apps and see what's going on. So let me close that down. And we can get to more cooler stuff. So what I'm going to do now is close this out. And I will start. Anybody in here doing container apps today? Nobody. No hands at all. Do people in here know about why you would want to do containers? Yes? No? I see a hand in the back. So a big push that we have in VS 2017 is support for what we call Docker containers. Docker is this thing that I think has gotten a lot of popularity in the last year or two. And the main reason why is I assume people in the room that are building applications, especially server applications, you have somebody in your team that builds a virtual machine, a VM somewhere for you. They configure it. They put your SQL servers in it. They put your .NET frameworks on it. They build all this stuff. And they build these machines and push them around your network. Then as a developer, I sit and work on my machine, which does not look exactly like that machine. And maybe when I push my application to production, I run into some kind of problem. And so what if you could actually develop, switch that to Windows, what if you could actually develop on the same virtual machine that you're going to run in production? And what if the way you define that virtual machine is just via text files? So what I've got going on here is I've got Docker installed on my machine. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to come up here and create a brand new ASP.NET Core application. So let's go here. Let's go find .NET Core. And I'll do an ASP.NET Core application, call it Web Application 1. And when I start building these applications, there's a new thing in the dialog box, and that is enable Docker support. And if I enable that, let's build a web application here. I'll check that, and I can choose whether I want to run Windows containers or Linux containers. We can run Windows containers on Windows Server 2016. We have another version of something called Windows Nano. If people have heard of it, that's a small version of Windows Server. Windows Server Core is about a 12-gigabyte server image. Windows Nano ends up being about a 500 or 600 meg image. And so you can choose to do Windows or Linux. I'll do Windows. That create. And I'll show you what's different about it once it creates here. So here it is. Hide the toolbox now. As everything starts restoring. Now you might notice there's something different about my project. I've got these new Docker Compose files. And if I scroll down in my project, I've also got this Docker file. This Docker file is the file that actually tells me what image to actually run my application in. So it says from Microsoft/ASP.NET Core 11-NanoServer. That's an image up in a site called Docker Hub. And I can just search for things like ASP.NET. And you'll find a variety of beautiful internet here. There you go. You'll find a variety of images up here, including the images that we build. And this is the base image of this thing. And then there's just some configuration here, where to get the source code for the app from, what the folder it runs in, what port to expose, and how to actually start the application. Even cooler, these compose files that I have up here. And this is where you actually can build an array of services. So for example, I have a web application. Let's say my web application depends on a API, a backend. So this is a front end, and I need a backend. You can chain these things together, and when you launch the app, it'll create a container for each of these, start them all in the right order, and so you can chain all this stuff together. It's pretty cool. But now, because I'm doing this, let's go to my controller, and let's write a little bit of code here. I'm going to write some code saying, let's go to my about, and let's go get the operating system here. So my OS would be something like, what is this stuff? System.runtime.interop services. I don't know how we came up with this stuff. I mean, this is .runtime.information.OS description. Whew, that's a lot of text. I'm sure somebody on the BCL team thought that was a good idea at one point in time. Now I'll stick that in my view data. There we go. And then I can go somewhere into my views. Maybe we'll just go to the about view. And I can say running on at view data. So let's try to build this. And so something else you might notice that happened as part of all this is my normal debug button now says Docker. And so there's a bunch of commands running down here in the command prompt, because what's happening right now is we're actually creating a virtual machine on the fly. Notice that my run button is Docker. And that's because my default project is this Docker Compose project. If I come down here and make this the default project, this will go back to IIS Express like you're used to. But if it's the Docker Compose project, that tells us when you run this application, we want to go boot up that VM. So I'm going to control F5 this application, watch a bunch of stuff scroll by, and I'm going to open up a prompt here, and I'll show you. What's happening, the first time I do this, it will create a virtual machine on the fly. And the cool thing about this is this virtual machine can be the same virtual machine that I want to run in my production. And so the benefits you as a developer get is you get to actually basically develop on the same virtual machine that you were going to run in when you run in production. So it looks like it's made the virtual machine. It's waiting for there you go. And so this is not super crazy exciting, because if I show you this, I can do this docker ps-all. This shows you my virtual machine. There it is running. I can do docker images. That shows you my app here, right there. So it is a virtual machine, and that's kind of nice. I go to about. It doesn't say anything super exciting, because NanoServer actually is like running on the same server that I am. It's basically a variant of Windows 10. So you get a version number that's kind of boring. Let's change the app now. Let's go back here. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to switch. Well, first off, I'll show you something cool here. I can take that application, and I can stop it. And this is where Docker is really cool to me. I'm sure we've all I'm sure all of us in the room have destroyed machines. If I want to, that's now gone. So, excuse me? So the question is there a web server on the virtual machine? If you're running a Windows Server Core container, yes, there is. There's IIS on the virtual machine. Because I created a .NET Core application, .NET Core contains its own own web server called Kestrel, and we're running Kestrel. But what I want to show is, as fast as I built all that stuff, I just deleted it. So my machine's not messed up at all. The virtual machines are all gone, and I'm back to normal. Now I can do something even crazier. I can come over here and I can say switch to Linux containers. And what's going to happen now is I can actually build, on my same Windows machine, I can actually build .NET Core applications that run on Linux and develop them and debug them just like I would anything else. So now if I run Docker images, I see, is it switched? This is one of my old applications. Yeah, it's Alpine. Yeah, good. So I see all that stuff. Let me just test something here. Make sure the switch did not hurt me. Let's try this command. So Windows Creators Update has a small glitch to it that causes trouble for me sometimes. So let me just fix this. And I'll show you a Linux container real quick. Because I switched from Windows containers to Linux containers, I've got to make a... quick change here. And okay, let's see if things are happy now. Basically, we have to be able to share the C drive into the container, and that's done differently on Windows and Linux. Cool. I'm good. Okay, so let's go back to our app. And our app is interesting from the standpoint that what I'm going to do is I'm going to nuke this project. I'm going to nuke the Docker file. And so I'm basically removing the container parts of the application, so it's no longer a container-based application. I'll go to the folder that runs this stuff, because just deleting the project doesn't actually delete the files. So let's remove these guys. And now I can come back to my app and I can say, let's go add Docker support. And this time I'll add Linux Docker support. And this will be more interesting because when I run this, you'll actually be able to see that even though I'm on a Windows machine, so let's even do this. Let's put a breakpoint over here. So I'll put a breakpoint here, and I'm back to being Dockerized, so I'm going to run. And this time, we're going to go create a Linux container. And we will attach the debugger to it. When my browser comes up, I will actually be able to go and hit a breakpoint in a Linux container. And so on a Windows PC, You can develop Windows, iOS, Linux, whatever. Let's click over here. Breakpoint hits. Notice on my breakpoint, look at my OS here. Linux. Breakpoint running. So on my Windows machine, I can develop .NET applications on all these platforms, debugging, everything great, awesome, power of containers built in. Okay, so let's close this guy out. And let's do, this is one of my favorite demos. I don't know if you guys have seen this before, hopefully have not. This is something that we worked on for many, many years. And it's just starting to come out for .NET Core applications. It will happen for full framework applications as well in the future. So I'm in the .NET Core node here, and I'm going to create a console application. So let's create the console app, and I'll show you a bunch of cool new things. First off, who in the room has ever edited a CS proj file? Some folks have. I apologize. So one of the things that happens, this is happening for .NET Core projects with VS 2017. In the future, later this year probably, I will enable this feature for existing .NET applications. So WinForms, WPF, ASP.NET will all get the same feature. I can now edit the CS proj live in Visual Studio. So first off, look at my CS proj file. Eight lines of CS proj compared to the older versions. In fact, let's go to my source folder, and I think I stuck a old console app in here for fun. Here's what a console project looks like today. Beautiful. I expect you all to type that by hand. So when we were building .NET Core, we wanted customers to be able to actually build project files by hand, and that's why we changed the CS proj format. And so the CS proj format, there's a couple things that are new here. So if I go look at my CS proj, you can see it's very simple. My app is an .exe, it's using the .NET SDK, and in my case, it's using .NET Core 2.0. Even better, if I go and add a NuGet package, let's go add JSON.NET, latest stable. Yeah. Now, what's cool is CS proj file, give it a second here to restore. If I go look at my CS proj file, you'll now see it has a reference to the package inside of it. So the CS proj file, there's no longer a packages.config in this new model. You see the packages that you actually reference directly in the file. And as I was saying before, you no longer have to like open it, close your solution, or unload your solution, reload your solution. If I come over here and look at my dependencies nodes, there's my NuGet, there's my JSONsoft. So NuGet packages are first class in the Solution Explorer. But I can come over here. If I come and erase this guy, and I save, notice the package went away in the Solution Explorer. If I restore, and I save, it comes back in the Solution Explorer. So we will give you full IntelliSense. We don't have it today, but by the time 15.3 ships, you'll have full IntelliSense here. You'll get full package IntelliSense in here. You can hand type these things if you want. You don't have to reload your projects. And I'm going to bring this to, as I said, all .NET projects. So for fun, let's take this back out. This is something that we did not make the RTM, but it is in 15.3. Let's go. We don't reference Project JSON anymore or NewtonSoft anymore. Let's go to my code, and I'm going to type over here J object O equals null. So I get a light bulb over here. This is a resharper feature that we should have added like 4 years ago. And notice that it says, hey, I notice you're using NewtonSoft. Do you want me to install the package for you? So in my case, I just told it to bring the package manager up. I can do it over here. Should be able to do it and just have it do it for me. Yeah, NuGet just got installed over there. I run. So there'll be 15.3, we'll have this. You'll basically be able to install NuGet packages right from the IDE like that. Has anybody in here heard about or tried CodeStyle? Such an active crowd. Okay, so let me show you CodeStyle. This is something that I think is really cool. So in fact, I messed my machine up with it this morning, and I'll have to go figure out how to unmess it up at some point. We've had this. If I drive in here and I go to the text editors, and I look for C#, and I'll zoom this in because we use tiny fonts in here, and I go to CodeStyle, I get all these rules. And so the way I think of this is, I assume wherever you guys work, you guys have rules. Are you using tabs? Are you using spaces? Are you using 4 spaces? Are you using 8 spaces? Are there rules that you want to set about the way that your people format code? Do you want to set up rules around the way that people actually write code and stuff like that? And so CodeStyle is something here where I can come up here and set a bunch of these types of things. So for example, let's say I'm a person that hates var. I don't want people to use var in my company. So I can say var preferences, make it an error. I try to pick ones that are going to piss people off. So, but teams have different rules on these kinds of things. And so what we do with CodeStyle is we let you define these rules. And historically, we've let you define these rules in tools, C# options. Great. I want to save my entire team. I want to put this in my project. So let's do something a little different here. So I'll turn that back off, since you guys all like the var. I'm going to turn it back off again, though. So I'm going to create a file in my project over here. Let's go and add a new item. And I'm going to create a .editor config file. And you just have to love our product sometimes, because it's like, how many file types do we have? .editor config. And so this is what's cool about this file. Great. The heck? Solve. Okay. So typically, as I said, those settings that I was showing before in tools options, those are not great because those actually don't follow my project around. What if I had the ability to write a text file that contained all the settings that I want for my project? So on a project-by-project basis, I can set for my team how this is going to work. This is great because I might have one project that uses tabs, one that uses spaces. As a developer, no matter which one I open, with an editor.config file inside the file, I will get those configurations. So what I do is I say, this is the root, because you can actually override these at different folders. I can then tell it what files do I want it to work against. .cs. So I say I want star.cs. And then I could do interesting things like indent style equals tab. That basically says that file in my project means anybody, no matter who they are, no matter what their settings are in their Visual Studio, when they actually use this project, they will get tabs. And so there's a website that I have that contains, I heard a boo, somebody doesn't like tabs. Can't please everybody. But there's this website that I've got here that contains a list of some of the things you can do, like indent style, indent size, tab width, end of line, char set, root. Those are interesting. But really, the cooler part is each of those settings I was showing you before, like if I want to ban var in my projects, those are available as well. So if I come over to this page, now I'm going to see all those settings that I can change and set in this file. So let's, for fun, here's your var for built-in types. And all I've got to do here is copy this. And just to piss everybody off, I basically just said, in this project, if you use a var for a built-in type, I don't want that, and you'll get an error. So let's try that. See if I screwed up. After you change that file, you will have to reopen a file in the editor. But if I did something like var count equals 5, oh, look at that. If I build it, go to my error window, there's my error. But please tell me, is this not cool, but having a text file you can embed in your project, in your source, that sets the rules for your project so everybody in your developer team gets the same rules versus having random configurations or trying to share configurations? Is that not cool? Come on, guys. Yes. But there'll be history on that, and you'll be able to find out who that was via source control. So let me show another one here, which I think is pretty cool. So I really love this feature. What's going to happen in the long run with that feature is the settings in the tools options will actually just set that, will create that file for you on the fly. So basically, any things you change there will actually happen inside of that.
Does this tie into the control K?
It does, yes. So the question was, does this tie into the formatting? And yes, if you set that style, and then you can format the document, or you can format your entire solution or project, yes, all those things will take effect. So this is another cool thing, and this is live unit testing. And got a project here. Let's make sure it builds and is happy. And what I would typically, you know, if the way you typically run tests and stuff like that in our product today is I would come and open this test explorer, and I would do a run all after it decides to find stuff. Typically, what you do is you would come over here, you would run tests, tests will fail, and when they fail, you're kind of at a, you don't have, it's not a great experience, because the only way to actually find out what parts of your code don't have tests, if you're a testy kind of person, is we have another option on the tools menu where it'll actually run code analysis and go run analysis across your project to see what you have tests for. And so you saw this took a while to even come up and find these tests, but if I run these tests, it's kind of a manual step. A test failed there. I get some information in a window that's too small. I get a stack trace I can jump to. As I said, if I really wanted to go find more stuff about this, I could actually go and say, go show me code coverage for these things. This is kind of the old school way of doing testing, I think. That should open a code coverage window in a second, I think. There you go. And I can see which methods in my app don't really have tests, but not really, because that's really a beautiful view. No. And so we have this idea of being able to do what we call live unit testing. And so live unit testing looks more like this. So what I would do is I come up here under tests, and I say live unit testing start. And it'll start booting up. And so when it boots up, a couple of cool things happen. Now in my code editor, as I move around, you can see these indicators letting me know if there's tests for something. A green check mark means there's a test and it passes. These obviously mean something's not healthy for my application, these red X's. And these mean that there is no test here. And so instead of having to run code coverage and look at stuff, right now in the editor, in the left rail, I can actually see how I'm doing here. And then if I do find a failure, and I do have a couple failures here, well, first off, I'll show something else. You watch this. As I change the code, I'm going to just erase the white space. Oops. As I change the code here, and you see all those things turn to spinners. And what happened was, is any change of code, and we start rerunning your test. We're running your test as you actually edit your application. And we do this in a smart way. We have logic in the system that only runs the tests that are that actually change based on the code that you're changing. So it's not like you change something, we go run a billion tests. We actually can determine which tests need to be run based on the code that you change. So let's go click on the X. That's going to show me the test here that worked, and then here's one that is not. So assert failed. So let's click that. That's going to take me to this test that's failing. And now an easier way to go find out what's going on is I'm going to actually say debug the tests. So I found my test that's failing. I say debug the tests. Let stuff go on here. Boom. There's a failure here. System null reference exception, object reference not set to an instance of an object. So let's look here. And looks like notes is null. And so that's probably a bug that I have where in my constructor, I probably should be dealing with putting a null check in. So let's go find our constructor here. Here it is right here. And let me go back there. The debugger is still running, by the way. And I'm changing the app, so if notes equals null. Then throw new null. Argument null exception. Name of notes. Okay, save that. And notice the debugger's still running. And notice that all my tests are now passing. So live unit testing is awesome from the standpoint of great visibility into your code to see what code is running, what code has tests, what code doesn't have tests. Easy way to find the failed tests. Once you find the failed test, click the test, tell it to start debugging, and once it starts debugging, you're good to go. So what else can we do? Oh, I didn't do something in that last demo that I need to finish something actually. So let's stop this project. So that's live unit test. Check it out. It's awesome. Not today. It's only .NET test today. Actually, let me finish the last demo, and I'll take some questions right at the end. So let's go find that console app that we had up a second ago. There it is. And something else about that new project system. I showed you, you know, the auto find NuGet packages. I showed you the awesome CS proj, the fact you could edit the CS proj. We've got our rule that's not going to like our line of code here. So let's fix our line of code. Another thing that I didn't mention when we looked at CS proj, if I go and do the edit of that CS proj, is notice there's no files listed in this CS proj. So for fun, let me go do something like this. I'm going to find the folder that my app is in. And I will go to that folder over here in my command prompt. I'm in that folder now. And I'm going to add a new file here. So let's just use VS Code, and we'll create test.cs. I'll save it. Close. Did I save it? Ah, there it is. So notice the file just showed up. So there's no longer is this model where you have to actually right-click and add existing item every time you want to add a file to a project, or do I need to have all my files listed in my csproj file? This is great for anybody using source control because everybody's merged the csproj file a zillion times as files are added. If I come back over here and I delete the test.cs, it just disappears in the Solution Explorer. So as I said, that's another cool piece of this tech. All of that's coming to all projects, hopefully by the end of the year. I'll do one more, and then I can answer a couple questions. This is an old demo, but that I've done for a while. It's, as I was telling some of the guys behind the stage, for me, we've been working on some of these products for so long that it feels like these are not new things to me, but they are. This is probably the coolest C# 7 feature that we added, and this is tuples. And so I've got a regular application here, and it's got a result. I've got this garbage result class that I use. And so what I can do in C# 7, you get this with VS 2017, I can just say, hey, let's do an int sum, int result, int count. So now I can basically define my return type to be what we call a tuple, multiple values there. And then I can come down here and I can just say, I'll just return my sum and my count. And now I can just nuke my stupid struct. I build the app. The app will build and run just like it did before. And then, of course, this is something we added in the previous version of C#, but I don't know if everybody knows about it. And that is, you typically do this 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, kind of whatever kind of thing. That's really kind of, ugh. Add your dollar sign here. And now I can just say, results.sum, results.count, kill all this junk. Still works good, better. Now I can do even crazier stuff, like let's say this was objects instead of ints. That's going to cause problems down here. Because down here, you see it says, first off, you guys are going to all enjoy this. Oh, it's not complaining. for var, so now I'm getting an error because it's not an int. And so what I would typically do is I would write something like this. I would say, if v is int, move this code into here, and I would do something like this, int foo equals int v, do this typecasting thing here, and I would add my foo. So we noticed that was kind of stupid, and that would be so much easier if I just did this. So now, when I do an is something is, I can actually give it a name all in the same line and not have to create the actual extra variable. And app should still run. Results are still the same. Success. Tuples. Tuples and a bunch of C# 7 stuff. There's a whole bunch more C# stuff, but that's tuples. Is anybody using tuples? A couple hands. They are awesome. Less code. Anyways, I have covered that. Actually, I didn't do the start page. I'll show you the start page. I feel kind of lame showing a start page, but I will. We inside of Microsoft we call this the most closed page. in the product. There are a couple new things on the start page, though, and some of them actually make sense. Notice that I have these two projects up here pinned. So I can now, on my start page, I can go look at all this stuff, and I have an option of actually pinning something to be on top of the start page. So I think that's actually a reasonably awesome feature, because I have these two projects, which I work on a whole bunch, and they always show up at the top of my list, not just the random collection of projects that I have. So that's kind of interesting. I also have, on my machine, I have installed, I don't think I have it up here, GitHub extension for Visual Studio. I've installed the GitHub extension for Visual Studio. Simple, visualstudio.github.com. And because I've done that, GitHub shows up here as a first-class citizen on my open, and if I click it, it will bring up this dialog box showing all the repositories that I'm have associated with my GitHub account up in the cloud, and I can even do searches for those things. And I can clone the project right from GitHub in the dialog box to my machine. So for file open, if you have stuff in GitHub, you can find it, clone it. There's music store. I actually have it already, so it's gonna not do that. But so that's a new thing on the homepage there. And then I'll just make fun of myself. We also have this new ability. If file new is too hard for you, you can now search here, and we'll give you the results in a window that's so small. It's like, oh yeah, I want to see two at a time, please. Let me just scroll through that, because that makes a lot of sense. So one thing, if you don't know me, is I am more than happy to make fun of my own product when we do stupid stuff like a two-line search result. anyways, that is all the stuff I have time for. I do have another talk on .NET later today, and I'll do another 5 or 6 of these kind of demos. And once again, here's the screen with all the links to the stuff. The editor config stuff, I think, is really awesome. The VS GitHub extension and the preview, which you can install side by side and not mess up your machine. So please try the 15.3 stuff. And anybody that has questions, come up, and I'll do questions now. Thank you, guys.